Good morning.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, everybody. This is Fran Lewis. Haha, twice in 1 week. Yeah, aren't you lucky? I have to tell you that the snow's not there anymore where I live. They actually removed it, which is great. The sun is shining. It's hot outside. It's 32 degrees, just a little above freezing maybe, just a drop maybe, 33. And it's going to be a beautiful day. And I have New York Times bestselling author Terry James here. And we're going to talk about Noni Blake, who just got out of a mental institution, and nobody really wants her to come back home because they worry about her because she's not exactly a stable person. I'm not going to tell you too much more. We have Chief Sam Craddock, by the way. He's one of my favorite characters. I really like him. The fact that he doesn't back down and that he actually solves the case or tries to solve the case and he doesn't hesitate to ask for help, this guy's really good. He's better than Andy of Mayberry, that's for sure. Much better. So, good morning, Terry. How are you?
Good morning. Well, I'm okay. It's not quite. It's 7 o'clock here in California.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize it was so early.
Oh, it's, you know, all it's right. Funny. I get up at 6 every morning.
Oh, me too. My husband leaves at work at 3, so usually. But as a matter of fact, Philip Margolin emailed me, and he's doing an interview with me February 29th at 12 in the afternoon because he said it's too early at 10. So, This is an interesting title, The Necessary Murder of Noni Blake. It has a lot of different meanings. How did you create this story, and what traits did you hope that people would notice in her right away?
Oh, in Noni?
No, actually in Sam. Actually in
Sam.
Oh,
in Sam.
Sam is the detective, yeah, and he's the main character who I love.
Samuel is always someone who feels a sense of responsibility, and I want him to seem trustworthy and that he is not a stick in the mud, but that he is serious and feels that justice is the important thing, even though he tries to understand what is going on with people. That's what I want people to know about him.
Well, he's got some great character traits, and I like the way he goes about doing things. But he gets stuck in this particular thing. Why this small town? How did you create Jared Creek?
Well, that's easy. I grew up in Texas in a small town, but not this town. I was on the Gulf Coast. My grandparents lived in a town that Jared Creek is based on, and I used to love to go and visit them. And when I was in college, I wrote short stories that were based in a town like this, and I called it Jared Creek. So when I was ready to write a mystery novel that I thought would be really a good one, I went back to Jarrett Creek, and I thought, you know, what about if I set a story there? So that's how it came about, and it's turned out to be a wonderful setting because I know it so well in my head.
It does. It does fit. Is this a series? Is this the first one in the series, or is there another one?
No, this is the fifth one in the series.
I didn't know that. I got to read more. I love this. I love this character. I seriously
love
this character.
Well, the first one is A Killing at Cotton Hill, and it won the McCavity Award for Best First Mystery. So it's a good book. I like all of them. I have a particular affection for the second one, and I'm not sure why.
Well, then you have to send me that one because I love this character and the fact that there's large print.
Oh,
I got this book. And I had a pile. No, seriously, I have like at least 40 or 50 at a time, and
wow.
I read the back of this, and I go like, wait a minute, this is different. Okay, let me read the first couple of pages, and the next thing I knew, I was done with the book.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I read fast. I said, okay, that's not right. There are 75 people. You know what? If it catches my eye, I'm going to read it right away.
Oh, great.
So, Noni was committed. Why did they commit her? And when they found out that she was getting out, why did they want her not to come there?
Well, she was committed because, I mean, and you find this out in the first couple of pages of the book.
Yeah.
She was committed because when she was 14, she tried to kill her younger sister, who was 8.
Mm.
And, you know, normally they would have said, oh, it was an accident, they were fooling around, but she insisted that she meant it. And so,
of course,
they put her away. And when she was coming home, you know, as in any, not just small town, but in a lot of places, people get very nervous about someone who was obviously had some mental problems coming back into a community, and that's why they're worried. They don't like the idea that she'll be back.
I wouldn't imagine. And they don't have very, very pleasant memories of her. But when
no.
she does come home, Charlotte, who's the one that she hurt, why doesn't she, she's the only one that seems not to really care that she's there. And I would be wondering that she would be the one that would, like, get her away from me, get her out of here.
Well, she was 8 when it happened, and she was, although there's a lot in her back, in her memory about it, she doesn't really, she tries to ignore that, and she absolutely worshipped her sister. And so she wants to believe that this, that she didn't really mean to do that, and she wants to forgive her. And so for a long time, she's insisted that they should try to bring Noni back home. And so when she does come back home, she's willing to try to work with her.
The family is very odd. How did you create them? They are an odd, crazy bunch.
You know,
especially that mother.
I don't know how these people come about for me. the funny thing is I felt sorry for Adelaide. I felt that she had been you know, what I work with is secrets that people keep that really damage them. And Adelaide has her secrets, and everybody else in the book has some secret that they're holding on to. Mm. This family has been destroyed by a secret. And that's how I approached it. I actually started with the idea of Noni and what kind of family she would come from. That was the first thing in my head, is to work around Noni.
Well, Noni is crazy, and in more ways than one. But that's all I'm going to say. And the fact that this family is blind and is really even better. So when Sam comes there, why does he come there?
Why does he come to see the family?
To their house, yeah.
Oh, well, because they've found Noni dead in the pond behind the house.
Yeah.
So that's what, I mean, he's the chief of police, so he has to investigate. That's, you know, it's interesting because they talk about a call to action in books for detectives, and it's built in for a chief of police, of course. He has to act. He has to, I mean, he could sit back and say, gee, I don't know, but I don't think that would work very well in a mystery novel.
Well, you know, it's funny that you should say that, because I've read, like, how many mystery novels? A couple of thousand?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first one. The reason I like Sam so much is because he comes from a small town. He's smart. And the writer is making him into an intelligent investigator that's not going to sit back and say, I come from a small town. We don't do that here. And I'm not going to handle the case. Whereas in some books I've read, they bring in the militia.
Right, right. Well, that, you know, in Texas, theoretically, it's the highway patrol that comes in to investigate a case if someone is murdered. In actuality, I discovered that it's usually the Texas Rangers that do, and the man that told me this was an investigator in a town of about 55,000 people. He'd been a homicide investigator for 25 years. And asked him this question. And he said, well, yes, theoretically, on paper, it will be the highway patrol. But he said, in fact, it's usually the Texas Rangers because, and listen to this, they have unlimited resources. I just thought that was fascinating.
Oh, excuse us, yeah.
So it turns out that man who is the highway patrolman, but the Texas Ranger who comes to investigate this knows Samuel and knows that he's capable. So he says, well, you know, I'm going to leave this to you unless you really need us. So that's how that comes about.
There are some other strange characters in this book.
Mm-hmm.
There's the father, there's Billy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a few others. So which ones would you like to tell everybody about? Because I don't want to give anything away.
Oh, goodness. Well, I don't know if you want to talk about Maria now.
Yes, I have that on the... she's down here somewhere. Yeah,
okay.
Well, I have her.
In the family? In the family?
Yeah, I've got that.
Well, I think Skeeter is an interesting character. When I first wrote this book, Skeeter was a different character, and I didn't feel like I had really gotten him. So I went back and I really thought about what he would be like. He's sort of an innocent in this. He doesn't really know. Mm. He's a much younger kid. He didn't know Noni, and he's sort of a layabout. He doesn't really do much of anything. And Samuel early on says, "What do you do with yourself? You know, why are you not in college?" Well, he finds out he's a little bit lazy, and Samuel actually talks to him about this and says, "You know, you need to do something." And the kid has all these excuses. I thought he was an interesting character the way he turned out. At first he was devious, but then I decided he wouldn't be devious. You know, you have to really think about your characters and let them come through.
Yeah, well, he didn't have any total guidance, and they just sort of let him.
And
exactly. The fact that Sam took him under his wing, I would be curious to see if we bring him back in the next book, this kid, and maybe he'll straighten himself out and get a job, do something. Because you know what? This is a good lesson for teens and people to realize. Tell me about it. We've got a whole bunch of teens in my family, and I'm very proud to say that two of them are acing college. A third one's going to be a nurse, and the fourth one just decided she's going to go into becoming an EMT.
All right. Interesting.
Yeah, and I got really excited because I've got enough college degrees to make up for every one of them plus more. And my nephew's going for business, and he's acing it at Bentley. I'm so proud of him.
That's
and the
great.
Other one's going to finish next year, and he wants to be a sports manager for a baseball team. So
oh my!
He's got these. Yeah, he's very smart too, and of course, if they get stuck, they know who to call.
Well, what kind of sport?
Baseball, football. He was trying to over the summer get an internship, and they don't answer you. They don't even answer you, no. So he wound up getting stuck working with my brother, manager of the bowling center, which he could, you know, whatever. And poor DJ got stuck. Well, what can I say? Actually, he got a job up here at a club as a waiter, and he was enjoying himself. So he was staying with his wonderful aunt for like a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And then when he came back the third time to drive, he's never driven from where he lives to here. And some guy sideswiped him, and he got into an accident, but it wasn't his fault. It was the other guy's fault. So he didn't come back, and I lost my company and my walking partner. But Samuel's chief Sadek is straight-laced. And who does he ask for help to help him to solve this case? Because, I mean, there's a murder right there. And for some reason, the family doesn't seem upset at all.
Well, they are upset initially, but then he realizes that they're hiding things. And so he has to figure this out because he doesn't know this family. He knew the father for a while, but he didn't know him well. And then the family sort of moved out to this area that they call the ranches, and Samuel can't understand why anybody would want to live out there because it's just in the middle of nowhere and there's really nothing there. Mm. And so he's curious about the family, but he doesn't know anything about them. There's a character in all of the books named Loretta, and she's sort of the voice of the community. He listens to her because she comes by every morning to bring him some kind of sweet rolls or something because she gets up early and bakes.
This
and
cool.
She gives him the gossip. She tells him what people are thinking, and he sort of says to her, well, you know, cast your net a little bit and find out what people are saying about this, and then come back to me and tell me this. So that she is his main, I think of her like a Greek chorus, that she is the person who is the voice of the community.
I like that character, too.
Yeah.
She reminded me a little of Jessica Fletcher.
Oh, is that right?
But not quite. And I'm
That's
saying,
funny. I've never
I'm
watched
so glad
that show.
She wasn't the one that solved the murder because I'm reading a couple. And as I said before, the one I'm reading, Murder in Faux Pas Ireland, even though it's a cross-dresser that's solving the murder, it's almost like a Jessica Fletcher murder, but a lot better.
I've never seen that show.
You've never watched it? Well, you know what? She's,
never watched
she's
it.
Interesting. The sheriff allows her to sort of solve the case. She butts in.
Uh-huh.
And in real life, I don't know if that would happen, if a sheriff would turn over, but Angela Lansbury is great, so what can I say?
Yeah. Well, it certainly was popular for a long time. So
the
it's funny
the
because
really
people
like
say, well, what do you... I'm sorry?
Is Hedy Winthrop, Patricia Rutledge, that plays Hyacinth.
Yeah.
She plays a detective, and she's really good. That is better than that one. Which brings me to Maria Trevino.
Yes.
How come she came and that poor girl, she should have stayed home?
Oh, that's so funny because I don't think she's a poor girl at all. I think she's feisty.
I liked her, but she should have stayed home.
Well, she has something to learn in her life,
yeah.
And Samuel can learn from her too. And that's what he discovers. He's open to finding out what she knows that she can teach him. And she is open. She doesn't know she's open, but eventually she comes around to appreciating his methods as well. At first, she's very disdainful of him. She's from San Antonio. She has a very different life. And I don't know if this would ever happen, but this is fiction, and in my imagination, the state of Texas had decided to put minority cops into small towns just to, to kind of mix things up a little bit. I don't know that Texas would ever do that. But I grew up in a town where there were plenty of minority Hispanic people. And I actually knew a woman by the name of Mary Trevino. And I found, just before this book came out, that she died a few months ago. And I had decided to name this character after her. And I was so sorry that she had died because I would love to have known that she would know that this character was named after her. Because we were friends.
Somehow she probably does. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
she was a strong character, a really strong character. I liked her.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And
well, she came
up
on the scene like all of them do, just as who they are.
Well, I grew up in the South Bronx, so to me, everybody was the same.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go up in the South Bronx, nobody messes with you. No, I tell you. I learned that when I went to San Diego with my mom when she was having a serious surgery. And we're all sitting in the waiting room, and these group of girls that lived there looked at me, and they go, "Where are you from?" I go, "Where are you from?" They go, "Here, San Diego." I go, "I'm from the Bronx, New York. We'll get you coffee." I looked at them and go, like, it doesn't matter where I come. They got me coffee every day.
Oh, that's so
cool. You come
sweet.
From the Bronx? I go, like, God knows where they are. It was a bad neighborhood where I came from. I was tough, but I didn't care. I was cracking up. I go, like, and then we all made friends, and it was just like a circle of love every single day, for prayers and stuff. And it was just nice. I said, this is the way it's supposed to be. People are just supposed to get along.
Yeah.
So when Sam goes to the mental institution, when he reads Noni's file, how does he get her file from the mental hospital?
Well, I don't want to tell too much about the book.
Okay. Well, we'll leave that part out. She's just crazy.
Anyway, the doctor that examined her is no longer there, and so the other doctor is willing to give it because she has died, and so they're willing to give that to Samuel to read over.
Wow. Well, we're not going to talk about the dead person.
Exactly.
why is this family so lip-locked?
Well, as I said before, it's because of the secrets that they carry. And it's a secret not of their making. And they're really kind of stuck with it. They are stuck with this secret, and they have compounded it. They've made it worse than it needed to be. And it has paralyzed them. That's what's the problem with the family. And in fact, if you read all of my books, there are secrets that that eat at people. It makes them it just gives them problems that they don't know how to deal with.
And sometimes they deal with them in the wrong way, so they just go.
Oh yeah.
And then that's what was really great about this, because each family member had their own cross to bear.
Mm-hmm.
And each one had their own way of getting what they wanted. And it was scary, especially the ending. So tell us about Billy, because he was kind of like a odd character too.
Well, Billy knows things, and he doesn't want to deal with the family. He has gone off to become a rodeo rider. And I tend to think of those kinds of people as being solitary anyway. You know, they have to ride a circuit. They go into various places. And I hinted that he's kind of a guy who he likes to play around with the ladies. And, you know, he's just a – I think of him as being sort of a loner because his family was so strange and he just didn't want to deal with them. So he went off on his own. But he loves his sister. And she really looked up to him. He's the one who saved her life. And she's, you know, she's ever grateful. And she depends on him. So when he comes in, he sort of takes over and says, wait a minute. You know, he tries to get Samuel to butt out. And, of course, Samuel can't butt out because he's the police chief. So they have a little thing going there. But eventually Billy does come around because he realizes that Samuel has got to do his job.
Well, Samuel does his job, but he doesn't back down, which is really great. And he doesn't get intimidated, which is my kind of person.
Yeah.
But if you had to describe Noni as a person, what kind of character traits would you say she had?
Well, Noni is, you know, let's face it, Noni is something of a, she's a sociopath. You know, the doctor says he doesn't want to really say that at the age of 14, but she is. Mm. She doesn't have the same kinds of feelings that normal people have. But the funny thing is that she has, she thinks it's okay to do whatever she wants to get what she wants.
Yeah.
But the problem is that she is, she had a lot of family loyalty. And, you know, that drives her. And, you know, who knows what drives someone to go to such extremes to deal with a family that they care about. Yeah.
Why is she so resentful of her family? I mean, the dialogue was fantastic. I could do whatever I want, and you can't stop me. I have it in front of me. This book is. What happens when I review a book is that I destroy it. I circle. I underline. And so I don't mess up when I do the book review. So if I have to refer to something, there's a whole bunch of little pages that are folded in and stuff. So she's one of these people that she's like a typical teen. I can do whatever I want. You can't stop me. And just because you're my mother, I don't care.
Exactly. Well, she's that scary. In the extreme. She's that in the extreme, you know, and one of the things that Samuel is able to ferret out by talking to Loretta, the voice of the community, is Loretta finds out
Loretta.
That people, oh, I do too. He finds out that when Noni was in middle school, that the kids didn't really trust her, that she was a liar, and they knew that. You know, kids have a nose for that kind of thing. And the kids knew that, and they didn't trust her, and they thought she was snoopy, and they didn't like her very much, and they didn't know there was anything wrong with her. They found out.
Well, what did the teachers think of Noni?
Well, one of the teachers that only taught for 3 years that Samuel talks to felt that. You know, had a sister who had some mental illness, and she recognized that there was something wrong with Noni. And, of course, the school wouldn't do anything about it because they never do.
Yeah.
And the school did try to talk to the parents, and the parents didn't pay any attention to it, which often parents don't. And that was kind of what I was trying to convey, is that there was a teacher who cared about it, and then there was another teacher who was a man, and Samuel thinks that there may be something between Noni and maybe a man teacher, and so he has to investigate that. So the teachers were all aware that Noni did not behave well, but only the one teacher kind of took it seriously because of her experience with her sister.
Yeah. That's scary because even while I work with kids for 36 years in the public school system, and it was very frustrating. I knew child abuse and abuse in 2 seconds, and it was amazing. And I was blessed because the kids trusted me, and they would tell me this is what happened. Or if I even saw a scratch on a child's face that wasn't there the day before, I questioned it. And unfortunately, I was always right.
Yeah.
And you reported it. My school was pretty good. because I was very vigilant. And as the dean, I said, you're going to report this because otherwise I'm going to call and you're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
And sometimes ACS didn't do anything. And we would report it, and my school was really, you know, good with that. And then the child would wind up back where they started because they didn't do anything. They didn't follow up. Sometimes it's the school that wants to look blind and they don't want to look bad because after all the cases of abuse or whatever. And to me, if you don't report it and the child winds up, as you know, dead, God forbid, then it's your fault and you are responsible. And to this day, if I see something really weird on the street, I'll say to my husband, you know what, that doesn't look right. I'm going to say something.
I think
the last time I went into the pizza place in Laurent, there was a mother there, and I said to her, I'm a licensed reporter. If you use your hand on that child, I said, you're going to be sorry. And she just looked at me. I said, you heard what I said. I said, 911 is on my phone, 311. I said, we don't hit children. We talk to them, explain what they did wrong, and then we explain what they should do right. She doesn't love me. I didn't care because you know what? We have to protect our kids.
Yeah.
And they're not always right. I mean, children are disrespectful or whatever. And I learned from one of the grief counselors that said, you don't yell at children. You tell them what they did wrong and what you expect them to do right the next time before you elicit a consequence. Then if they don't do it, then you explain you're going to lose this, you're going to lose that, or whatever.
Yeah. You know, we're talking about a small town of 3,000 people, and that's in 20 years ago. And so we're talking about a school system that we're talking about a town. One of the things I want to convey about Jarrett Creek and about small towns in Texas in particular is that they know when someone is deviant, but they don't necessarily think that this is going to become a big problem. They sort of embrace that person and let them be. And in this case, it does become a problem. But often, I remember when I was growing up and I would go to this town and I'd hear about somebody who was just a little off. And everybody would say, oh, that's just old so-and-so. You know, he's always been that way. And, you know, you just put up with it. So there's sort of an acceptance that some people are not exactly right. And you just deal with them, you know. So that was one of the things I wanted to convey is that in a larger city, you know, there has to be some institutionalization of how people with problems are treated. But in a small town, that doesn't necessarily hold.
Well, you know, there are steps that are supposed to be taken in a larger town, you know, even where I am. And yet, I just read something, a book on mental illness, The Stranger in My Recliner by Doreen Medican. It's about the homeless and about a lady that was diagnosed as delusional, but I don't think she was delusional. I think she had dementia and Alzheimer's besides.
Maybe.
The rights of mentally ill people. And what happened was her husband knew her from the 12-step program, and Sophie, who's a real person, was on the street, and she wound up taking her into her home for 3 years.
Wow.
This homeless lady, yeah. And according to, because I know from someone that was told me that if a person that is mentally ill decides that they're not mentally ill, and unless two doctors and two people want to commit that person, they can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Even up here. It's scary. It's scary. So nobody did anything to help this lady. And as I'm reading the book and the tissues are coming out, I'm going like, This girl has to be committed. 3.5 years, Sophie lived with them. And what happened was she tried to get her a home, you know, a place to live. Once you take a homeless person into your house, even if it's for 5 minutes, the state and the city don't consider them homeless.
Oh, isn't that something?
Isn't that? And the bureaucracies. Well, I dealt with Medicaid for my mom, so I know. Unless you are a barracuda, that's what they called me. yeah, seriously. You're not going to get the services that are needed. And unfortunately, there is no, you know, cookie-cutter thing, and there's no list of what you're entitled to. So in this small town, maybe they didn't have the resources, or they saw it.
Yeah.
So what do they do then? I mean, Noni was completely whatever. Her family didn't want her around, and yet they accepted her back in the house. Why did the mother not tell her to leave. And second of all, the mental institution never told them that she was coming home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's part of the mystery of the story.
Yeah.
Is that that they didn't let anybody know she was coming home. So when Samuel investigates that, and he finds out some very different things.
Well, we can't tell anybody what that is. That would blow the cover of the story. I have to tell everybody. You got to read this because it'll set you thinking about people that are mentally ill, the help that they really need, and the fact that you can't look away. If something is off, you need to speak about it.
Yeah.
You need to say something. And it's sort of like the fault of the people that don't say anything. I guess maybe they wanted to have this veil over them because they really didn't want anybody to know their main secret, and that's
exactly
really out of her mind.
Exactly. Yeah.
So which characters are you going to bring back next time?
Well, you know, I'm actually writing a prequel to the whole series. That's set.
Oh, nice.
That's set about 30, 35 years earlier. Yeah. It's when Samuel is the chief of police the first time.
Oh, nice.
And it involves an incident that actually really happened, but I am fictionalizing it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And it actually happened a little later, and I'm making it earlier. And I'm using it to explore race relations in a small town, which is going to be quite a challenge.
Oh, I can't wait to read this. I seriously can't wait to read this. This
well,
sounds really
interesting. I've been thinking about it for quite a while, and I'm very excited about it. As for recurring characters, it's interesting to me how characters in these books sort of they present themselves, and you have to be open to them. You know, some characters fall away. Well, there's a character in the first book named Gabe Lopresto. That was in the very first of the series. And I didn't think much of him. He was just a guy. Second, you know, he kind of rears himself a little bit more. And in the third, he keeps coming back in the series. And I didn't expect that at all when I first met him. The chief of police, who's a drunk in the first one, comes back again and again. And I find him an interesting character. And then there are other characters who just show up and I don't ever see him again. So, you know, I think that's a lot of them. So I can't really...
You sound like Iris Johansson that says the characters lead me as to where I want them to go. And then they told me I can't go there.
Well, that's exactly right. If you find yourself... Yeah. I mean, I've found this when I'm writing, is that if I find myself suddenly, you know, stopping and saying, wait a minute, I don't know what happens next... It usually means that I took a wrong turn somewhere and that somebody wants to be part of it that's not. In fact, there's a character in this book, in Noni Blake, that is not a human character. And I always promised myself I would never write about dogs because so many
authors
do.
Oh, yes, that's right.
This dog came in and said, I'm here. Deal with me.
Oh, that's true. That was one of my other favorite characters in the book.
I loved him. It was such a funny. It was so funny. I have two dogs, but I just never thought about writing about dogs, and I never did care to read about animals in books, even though I know it's a really specific genre. And then around Christmas time, I read a book by his last name is Spencer. I can't think of his first name. Called Dog on It. It is hilarious. It's a wonderful book, and it's from the viewpoint of the dog. And I thought, oh, no, I'm not going to like this, and I loved it. It was just wonderful. Guy has a real knack. Spencer Quinn. Well, Spencer Quinn. That's
my brother has a rescue dog that he got from rescue center. And I was never a big fan of dogs until I met Bella Bella. I call her Bella Bella.
Oh.
And she loves her aunt because she knows when I come there, I'm going to scratch her back. And spoil her. And
yeah,
she'll jump by and I look
at
her, Bella Bella, you're a good girl. You're so beautiful, Bella Bella. Oh, she's a trip and a half. She's not exactly a guard dog. She just sort of like, but she's fun. And I said to my brother, I said, you know, I should write a story about Bella Bella and her life. So
really?
Tell me, is Samuel ever going to have a romantic interest?
Well, he has something of a romantic interest in this book, Ellen Forrester.
Yeah.
And she has become more and more of a romantic interest to him, and she has a secret too.
I know. That's why, you know, that's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
But when secrets are revealed, people are sorry that they had those secrets to start with.
Yeah. Yeah. Secrets and saving face. That's what people are trying to do, is to keep their secrets and to save face.
Well, sometimes you can't save face.
That's right.
So that when you rethink the situation and you realize it's too late, sometimes you lose more than you bargained for.
Oh, boy.
You try to save face.
I think that's what most mysteries are about, is when people suddenly reach their limit and they don't know where to go from there. And some of them decide that the easiest way to deal with that is to get rid of somebody. And that's when the mystery novel starts.
Well, this novel was interesting because the way you got rid of the person and whatever happened afterwards was original.
Yeah.
Mostly it's like somebody walks into a room, there's a prologue, the person's dead, and you have to figure out what happened.
Exactly.
And I usually do that in about 5 minutes, which is not good for the person that wrote the book. But what I really love is that the book is not 900 pages. I've read mystery books, and they're 500 pages, 700 pages. One particular was 800.
For heaven's sake.
And I don't give up. But if I have...
Well, the thing is that I don't like it when I feel that a book is padded. But I don't mind it being long if that's what it needs to be. And I think that's the important thing, is that an author figure out what needs to be there and take everything else out. I think one of my very favorite reviews ever said, there's not one wasted word in this book. And I just thought, I've done it. that's what I like to do, is to make sure that everything is pared away. But I want there to be enough, but I don't want there to be a lot of extra verbiage.
Well, let me, before I forget, because I forget nothing. My husband hates that. I remind him of everything. Tuesday at 10, I'm making up another show that I canceled. Stephen Schwartzley, Revenge Unleashed. And I promised I would be really nice to him on the show because he's making me a character in his next book.
Oh, that's so cool.
And I always wanted to be a character in somebody's book, and he's making me an F-2 bomber pilot. And then there's another author that said she's making me the evil murderer in her book, and I can't wait to see what she does. I always wanted to be in a famous person's book, and this is like so cool. But as an F-2 bomber, whatever. So far, he's putting me in the next one. On February 3rd, Tanya Kappas is going to be with me. At 10. Ghostly Demise and Ghostly Murder. Her series is hilarious. What do you do when you are the owner of eternal slumber, and the only way that you can bury the dead is by finding out who killed them?
That's
at her,
great.
And she's the only one that sees the ghost, except for her boyfriend, who's the sheriff.
Oh, my.
And they sent it to me. You know, like one of those things that wind up in the mail, and who is this person, and you ever heard of them before? Well, they sent me two of her books, and I'm going like, do I want to read this? I started to read it. I was so hysterical laughing, and finally something that could crack me up. And it was original murders. I mean, just the fact that a ghost could steal pies from somebody's house just to get somebody else in trouble. I was like, oh, my God, this is
That's
just
so
too
funny.
It is hilarious. The week after, I hope we're going to have Hot and Steamy Wednesday. How do you write your romance series? And how do you keep them within taste? Romance writers. And the
Very
week
good.
After, I've got John Land, who I love.
Yeah. Oh, great, yeah.
Larry Thompson, Marilyn Levinson, and Alan Tobel can't make it, so Mark Rubenstein. We're going to talk about what villain in your book would you like to bring back, and why? And if the villain could tell you how he wants to be portrayed, what would he tell you?
Oh, that's so interesting. Well, I know the answer to that.
Well, you have
all
to come join us. February 17th at 10.
Oh, right.
I do wild things like that also. I don't know. So another question. What's next? The next one is the one from 35 years ago. And what other novels do you want me to read?
Well, you should read all of them in the series, of course. The first four are wonderful. The last one was another mystery that he's investigating, that something happened in the past, but he doesn't know it at the beginning. And it's called A Deadly Affair at Bobtail Ridge. And the reason I write about Bobtail Ridge is that, as Loretta says, there's no ridge in sight anywhere around there, and she gets aggravated because, you know, these names of communities, they call them Tuscan Springs and stuff like that, and there are no springs, and it doesn't look like Tuscany. So.
Well, I'm going to email Cheryl, or you could tell Cheryl just to send them.
Okay.
And in between my 900 other books, you know I'm going to fit them in. You know I'm going to read them.
I hope so, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm going to read, I promise, next week. It's not out yet, people, but I'm going to read it. The 14th Colony by Steve Berry. It's been sharing with me.
Good.
And
yeah.
I have Jeffrey Archer's book, and it's very long, and I'm going to do my very best. That's next on my list.
Okay. Well,
and
I'm also working on a thriller if I ever finish it.
Oh, well, I have to read it. And I hope you're coming. I hope I get invited to the Thriller Fest, John Land. Yes, I hope so, because I haven't had so much fun, and I really, really enjoyed the workshops and sitting with my pen and pencil learning, because I'm just starting
great.
To write. My Bertha series is about my sister and I growing up in the South Bronx, Bertha and Tilly series, and that's pretty good. My last one is The Vanishing Mind of Ruth Swordlove, an Alzheimer's sufferer's journal, and it's in my mother's words. And I was very honored that Carla Negers and Vincent Zandri and Larry Thompson all gave me blurbs for the outside cover of the book.
Lovely.
So I am... my next book hopefully will be out eventually sometime this century.
I know what you mean.
Faces Behind the Stones, Hidden Truths and Lies, and that is where I kill off people that are behind the stone, and they tell the story. And I'm very honored to say that my 15-year-old nephew, Jake, wrote one of the stories with me.
Oh, wow.
Called The Competitor. It's a baseball story, and I told him that before I put the book out, to make sure his aunt didn't botch up the baseball facts, he's going to have to fix it. He broke his hip, and while he broke his hip, I put him to work. Cause he was. So where can readers learn, where can everybody learn more about you and your work?
Well, I have a blog that comes out once a week. It's called Subject to Change, and it's on my website, which is terryshames.com.
Oh, nice.
And the website, they can find out about my biography. But the blog comes out once a week, and I really love writing it. I think in 500-word bursts, I think, because I never seem to have any problem coming up with something to say in the blog.
Well, that is good, because I would love if you would write. I have a magazine online.
Mm-hmm.
It's called MJ8, in memory of my sister. MJ Magazine is for readers, writers, publishers, authors, and I'm working on, believe it or not, the 8th edition. And it's only a year and a half old, the magazine. And it's got writing tips, book reviews that I feature.
It's
book
called
reviews.
MJ8?
MJ Magazine. I'm going to I'll email Cheryl a copy so she can give it to you.
Okay, great.
So you can see. It's got writing tips, speak out. I spoke out about technology.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a blog called The Write Room that I was asked to write for this month. And I wrote Technology Overload, because I was in Manhattan for a reason. And I'm walking, and there must have been 500-600 people. You could have heard a feather drop. Nobody talked to anybody. They were all texting on their phones. No one talked to anybody. They were just ignoring everybody on their phones texting. I said to one girl, you better watch out. There's a car coming. And it's like... I wrote this great article. Everybody's reading it. They think it's fantastic. That I'm going to put that speak out section of the magazine. So we write about writing tips, writer's block, how to write a mystery, how you create your characters, anything that deals with publishing and writing.
Okay.
Would be great.
Good.
So that would be fantastic. And then, of course, I'm going to take the Noni Blake book review and put it in there and feature
Thank you.
And your bio, too, yeah. That's what I'm going to do for the next one. MJ8 is going to be, the theme is going to be memories.
Mm-hmm.
Memories.
Memories.
Any kind
okay.
of memories people have, yeah. The book is in memory of my sister, the magazine, but March is the memory, is the month that my mom passed away. So
uh-huh.
I usually do like memories and loss, and I'm going to get poems and
mm-hmm.
stories for the first section of memories that people have. If you've written a book and it's got memories of something or a short story or anything that has memories will be the first part.
Okay.
And then we're going to just do the normal book of the month, Fran's picks for the year. And
mm-hmm.
then in December, I choose like 10 authors, and I give them, because I'm sanctioned, the Just Reviews Best Book of the Year Award.
Oh, great. Great.
I do that, too. I do whatever I want. My mother was like that. She would say to me, I could do whatever I want, including making a left turn on that block down a one-way street and going the wrong way. And yes, she did. She did. She did. She did. She did. And three cop cars came and said, I said, Mom, this is great for a made-for-TV movie. And she looked at them and she said, it was a shorter way to go. They said, but it's a red light. And I looked at the guy and I go, like, don't even argue with her. It's not going to matter. There were 8 violations. She did not get a ticket. They felt sorry for me. They looked at me. I go, she made a one-way U-turn in the middle of this huge street, went down. The light was red, and I said, Ma, she said, well, the hand was white. I said, but the light was red. And I said to her, you can't go back. She went back down the same way. They just gave up.
That's
like,
funny.
It was, she was right. I mean, she does things. I mean, the cop stopped her with my sister, and he said, you made a U-turn, the U-turn in the wrong place. She's like, I do it all the time, so don't let it bother you.
That's so funny.
That was her. I mean, she lived her life, and she was a trip and a half. But this has been fun. I really
wonderful.
I'm so glad, and please make sure that I get the other 4 books.
Okay.
And as soon as the next one comes, does that have a title? The one from 35 years ago. Do you have a title for that one?
We are tentatively calling it Samuel Craddock.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's. I can't wait to read that, to learn more about him, because I really, really, really like him.
Thank
and
you.
And I really like Loretta. I like
Thank
Loretta.
You.
And I like Ellen. But
well, one of the
fun
one of the most fun things is that somebody came up to me one day and she said, I know you hear this all the time, but I want to marry Samuel.
I think he's got an awful lot of women, so that, I mean, maybe we should give Ellen a little competition here.
Exactly.
And Loretta's too old for him.
Yeah.
But we got to do something about Loretta. She's so cool. She's one of my
favorite
gossip.
I liked Loretta more the longer I've known her.
I really do like Loretta. So maybe we could team her up with somebody. Who knows? Maybe she'll help solve another murder. But anyway, I want to thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
And I really enjoyed this, and I really hope that we all get together at the Thriller Fest, and as soon as I get the 4 books, whatever, we can set up another date so we could talk about all 4 of them.
Great. Well, I love Thriller Fest, and I'm going to be there this year, and I hope to see you there.
I hope to see me there, too. Thank you.
Okay. So
everybody have a great day and have a great morning, and it's beautiful outside. Bye.
Bye-bye.